The House Judiciary Committee appreciate you all being here today. A couple of items of just general business. There is an overflow room in hearing room 343, which is the regular Senate Judiciary Room with television coverage. Is that right, Patsy? So if for some reason anyone's going to come in or we run out of chairs, there is some additional seating in hearing room 343. I want to make just a couple of introductory remarks, primarily to members of the committee, but we've set aside 3 days of hearings, today, tomorrow, and Wednesday, to essentially begin the conversation in this body about the issue of medical liability and the medical liability system in Oregon. It is a serious issue and one that, as we all know, impacts citizens of the state at many different levels. We have issues relating to patient access, patient safety, individual rights, the stability of the healthcare system, and all of those generally impacting Oregon's economy and our healthcare delivery system. As we know from what we've read and what we've seen on TV and what we've been talked to about, that there is nowhere that this is probably more acute than particularly in the issue of obstetrics, where at various parts of the state there are difficulties with access and that those issues are expected to grow. The purpose of these hearings is really to educate the committee and to the public, to the extent that they're watching this, as much as possible about these issues, for us to identify root causes and to evaluate proposed solutions that the various parties and interests will bring forward to us today. It's my hope that we can make progress on this important issue and that we can do so by evaluating the facts and the information in a reasoned manner and not be driven by the emotions that so charge all sides of this issue. By this approach and with an eye to patient safety and stability of our healthcare system, I believe that we can make progress. Now, some of us have had experience in this issue over time. I carried ballot measure 81 on the floor in the 99 session, and so I'm familiar with sometimes the tension and anxiety that can surround this issue, and I just want to encourage the committee, members of the public, and others that are here to remember that we are seeking a solution, that we are seeking to be informed, but that we are trying to make this as non-adversarial in this hearing room as possible. With respect to the committee members, we have a list of the presenters. We have a day today for those who are favoring various levels of reform. Tomorrow we'll have folks from the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association putting on their presentation, and then we'll have some folks on Wednesday from the Insurance Division and others talking about some additional information about the system in general. We're going to try to make it through this testimony in the time that we've allotted for the various interest groups, in fairness to them. I'm not trying to suggest to you that we shouldn't ask questions, but I think I want you just to be mindful of our time commitment and our effort to keep on schedule. It's fairly rare that you would block as much time as we have allocated for this committee, especially given our workload and as busy as we are for this issue, and I hope it underscores to you the level of seriousness that I give it and that we ought to give it as we try to address these problems. There is a package of bills that has been introduced. Those bills will be heard next week. They are a template for further discussion about potential ways to try to get at this issue. It will not be the only set of options or ideas that will be presented to the committee, but we will have an opportunity to examine some of the details more specifically at a later time, and I just want to remind the committee of that. So with that, we're going to begin, and we will call up the first panel for today's presentation. And I want to call up, I had a note here that Senator Schrader was going to participate in that first panel. Is he in the room yet? I don't see him. We will do our customary let Senator Schrader talk when he gets here approach. But with that in mind, we'll go ahead and call up Constance Powell, Bill Long, Monica Wiebe, and Scott Gallant from the OMA. He's on panel two.
Okay.
Dr. Powell, do you want to begin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Long is a trauma surgeon, and on trauma call, he's on his way. I'm hoping it'll be all right if he joins us when he comes in.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, thank you. I'd like to introduce the people in our group. I'm Dr. Constance Powell. I'm a psychiatrist in Portland and president of the Oregon Medical Association. To my right is Dr. Monica Webby, who's a neurosurgeon, pediatric neurosurgeon, a rare endangered species from Portland. And
Bill.
Dr. Long.
Dr. Long, they've got your name tag right down there. Why don't you sit in Mr. Gallant's seat so we can keep everybody straight? Nope, you got it right, Scott, just like that.
And Mr. Scott Gallant, who is the lobbyist for the OMA, and joining us to provide greater depth should the questions warrant it. As I said, I'm president of the Oregon Medical Association, which is a group of representing 6,800 physicians and surgeons in the state. We're here today to ask for your assistance because the medical liability issue is seriously threatening the ability of Oregonians to pay for and sometimes even get access to the medical care they need. This access to care is worsening throughout Oregon, in the rural areas and in the population centers. Excuse me. Since July of 1999, Oregon has experienced an enormous increase in the size of awards and settlements in medical liability lawsuits. Before the mid-1999, million-dollar awards were almost unheard of, but since that time, there have been 20 awards, verdicts, and settlements of over $1 million. Insurance companies can't increase the premium rates fast enough to keep up with the payout. During the same period, the premiums have increased an average of 117%, but as I say, that is really not covering their cost. Availability of coverage has been markedly reduced, and a number of insurers have withdrawn from the market, unwilling and unable, in some cases, to write medical liability insurance. Large jury verdicts directly affect the size of settlements, and even though the number of claims filed has remained constant, which is really noteworthy, and the number of paid claims has actually declined significantly over the past 3 years. The severity of these awards, meaning the amount of dollar awards and settlements, threaten many physicians' ability to pay higher and higher medical liability insurance premiums. The average claim paid in Oregon in the last 3 years has increased from $240,000 to $388,000. This clearly has a direct effect on what physicians pay for the insurance. We don't see an end to this increase. Current environment also naturally breeds more aggressive demands for damages in pending lawsuits. For example, two major remaining medical liability insurers, and that's what we have left, have a combined 435 open cases with prayers totaling $1.5 billion. When physicians are trying to decide what to do, whether they can stay in practice or not, they need to consider, understandably, this amount outstanding and what that will mean about further increases in their insurance premiums. Of course, the majority of these cases result in no payment to the plaintiff at all. Only 60 to 70% of cases result in payment. That's a significant amount of money in the healthcare system that is wasteful in its own right. That's about $10 million. There's enormous cost to the system in managing such claims and defending them. Without real remediation, it's clear that the trend toward ever higher medical liability insurance premiums in Oregon will continue and even escalate. Physicians and others in the healthcare community tell us they really can't sustain such increases, and that makes sense. What small business can take those multiples of overhead costs? Indeed, they question whether the insurance will be available to them, and when you look at the insurance companies taking in less dollar amount in premiums than they pay out in awards, that's clear too. There's growing evidence in Oregon that physicians are retiring earlier than they used to, and they're withdrawing from providing vital medical services to their communities because the services put them at significantly higher risk for lawsuits and consequently larger insurance premiums. There's also evidence that physicians are leaving the state or will be forced to do so if the medical liability crisis isn't soon resolved. OHSU recently released the findings of a study reporting, which is really worrisome, that since 1999, 22% of physicians who deliver babies in the state have stopped delivering babies. One-third of those continuing to deliver babies are considering stopping. They're looking ahead. They're looking at the train wreck, you know, personally as well as the healthcare system, and not so sure they can continue. We in Oregon are blessed with a dedicated and skilled medical community, outstanding medical centers, and a system of fine community hospitals that serve our patients well. But with a significant decline in the medical workforce, with fewer physicians, as a result of increased medical liability insurance and fewer insurers, we're very worried, considering the rapid spiral down. We're very worried that we won't have enough left to have a fabric of a healthcare system, and it's really unclear how we would rebuild. We have the uncomfortable distinction of having been identified by the American Medical Association as one of the initially 12 states in crisis and now 18 states in crisis. Patients do have bad medical outcomes, and some of those bad outcomes are the result of mistakes that doctors and other healthcare professionals make and that are made in hospital systems. And sometimes these errors result in serious injury to our patients. Since we don't have any other system other than our system of lawsuits to take care of the medical costs that the patients need help with when they have bad outcomes, we support that system simply because there is no other and these patients need help. We very much support the payment of the cost of their medical care and also reimbursement for lost wages, etc. The spiral down, and we were staying afloat with that system, you know, providing that social net through a legal system for addressing bad outcomes independent of why they occurred. But with the removal of the cap for pain and suffering damages, we started this downward spiral. We didn't have that, what we call stably unstable or unstably stable system. We started destabilizing in a dramatic way. We really very much want to be sensitive and responsive to the legitimate needs of our individual patients, but we're very concerned that we respond appropriately to the larger society so that all of our citizens have access to medical care. Since it seems that the system has suddenly and dramatically gone awry, it's been very fast. Something has to be done if our citizens are to continue to have timely and appropriate access to quality medical services, from prenatal care to complicated trauma surgery. Because the Oregon Supreme Court's decision in July 1999 declared a 12-year-old statutory cap on non-economic damages unconstitutional, we recognize that immediately available to us and to you, the options are limited. The packages of bills before you show some promise for relief in the crisis, and anything that helps the system overall, we seriously need to consider. We look to you and the rest of the legislature to do what you can to preserve and ensure access to medical care for our patients. Thank you. I'd like to introduce Monica Webby, who's a pediatric neurosurgeon.
Is Bill going next?
No.
Okay.
Either one of you. Whoever wants to go next. Dr. Webby?
I'll jump right in.
All right, great. Thank you.
I'm Monica Webby. I'm a pediatric neurosurgeon, and I practice in private practice in Portland, Oregon. I'm in a group of seven adult neurosurgeons, and I'm the pediatric component. I'm one of two fellowship-trained pediatric neurosurgeons in Oregon. I've been able, luckily, to continue to donate services to Healing the Children, and I continue to serve Oregon Health Plan patients and Washington Welfare patients, but I'm only able to do this because it's subsidized by my adult partners. And I do it also because I don't feel like any child should be denied access to health care. It might be helpful for the committee to understand what exactly I do. What exactly I do as a pediatric neurosurgeon, I do about 350 surgeries a year, and I deal with brain and spinal cord problems, developmental anomalies, hemorrhages, vascular malformations, tumors, and trauma. I realize every time I do a case that what I do in the operating room is completely irreversible and will affect the child for the rest of their life. And that's a long time when you're talking about babies, infants, or children. For example, tomorrow morning I'll be operating on a little girl with a tumor that was transferred up from a general neurosurgeon here in Salem that has a tumor in the cerebellum, which is right behind the brainstem. And the brainstem is God's country. It's like looking at the face of God. You should never be seeing the brainstem. And the problem with that is that the brainstem really cannot take a joke. If you do anything to the brainstem, the child is going to have serious problems. They may not be able to eat, drink, cough, breathe, move, or they may even die from the surgery. Now, neurosurgery, you don't get a second chance. You can't go back. If you mess up or you are trying to get a complete resection on this tumor to make this patient cancer-free, if you suck a little bit too much in one area or another, you may remove something that the child needs, and you can't put it back. And that's an incredible stress on the surgeon. The risks are high. And in a situation like this, in neurosurgery, there's no room for error. And complications are going to happen, and bad outcomes are going to happen, no matter how good you are or how hard you try. The patients know that they're a risk, and the surgeon knows that they're a risk. And when I think about this, every time I go into a case, I look at every patient like they're my own child. I've got four kids and one just about every age of every patient I take care of. And so I look at them all as if they're my own, and I agonize over every decision I make. And if you think about it too much, it can become paralyzing. You can think, oh, geez, if I just veer too far this way or that, I could really injure this patient, and I'm going to have to see this patient for the rest of my life or his life or whichever comes first with this problem that I will have to feel like I contributed to. But what concerns me the most about this situation and about this litigation climate is that whether or not we can maintain enough of my colleagues who are willing to risk every time they walk into the operating room several times their lifetime earnings to keep doing what they're doing. Every case I do has a potential for a disaster. Every case a neurosurgeon does. Spine cases, paralyzation, brain cases, strokes, infarcts, things that you can't recover. You can't get things back. For example, the guys in Eugene, well, guys and girls in Eugene, there's 9 neurosurgeons down there. And they looked at their cases last year and their income last year. And they found that to add brain surgery coverage adds $30,000 to their malpractice premium. So they all, 9 of them, all of them looked back over the past year. 7 of them did not collect $30,000 from doing intracranial surgery. And 2 of them sort of broke even. So these guys are talking about not doing intracranial anymore. And if you do not do intracranial in Eugene, which is a significant population, what's going to happen when somebody shows up in the ER with a head injury, with an epidural? As Bill Long can tell you, you've got about an hour from the time that happens to get in there and get it out, or that patient is not going to do well. If you have a ruptured aneurysm, if you have a shunt malfunction, if you have hydrocephalus, all these problems, you've got to have somebody available right away to take care of the problem, or the patient's either going to die or they're going to have permanent problems. In neurosurgery, you cannot mess around with intracranial neurosurgical problems. Somebody's got to be there. Now, the Oregon premiums have gone up 187% in the last 3 years. Now, of course, we can't pass this cost on to our patients because Medicaid reimbursement, Medicare reimbursement, it's either gone down or it stayed flat. And so the only thing you can do is start dropping off the lower reimbursing plans. And that's what's happened. My partners, who I mentioned subsidized me doing the kids, they've dropped off OHP because we have to keep a viable practice. We've got 25 employees. I mean, we've got three offices. We've got eight neurosurgeons. I mean, you know, we've got to stay afloat here. Nationally, neurosurgeons are limiting their practice. 43%, our major national neurosurgical organization did a survey a few months ago. 43% are no longer doing intracranial surgery. So these are brain surgeons that are no longer doing brain surgery. They're just doing spine. In 2001, 10% of all of our neurosurgeons retired, and that's dropped us down in the country to less than 3,000 neurosurgeons in the United States. When this happens, patients' access decreases as the doctors who continue to do this stuff get overloaded. There's a three-month wait now to get into my practice for a new patient, unless, of course, it's an emergency and we see him right away. And, for example, that little girl I was telling you about from Salem, who happens to be a Jehovah Witness, by the way, which makes the case even more difficult because they don't want to get a transfusion. I mean, all these factors all the time. That little girl, because I'm doing her tomorrow, I've had to move a full clinic from Tuesday out. And these are patients that have already been rescheduled multiple times because I'm a subspecialist. So the situation in Oregon is not just a crisis now. I mean, it's catastrophic for people. We're getting down to where people are going to start dying because people are not available to take care of them right away. I spend my life trying to take care of these sick kids. I neglect my own kids taking care of other people's kids, which I hate to say, but I'm afraid it's true. I spend routinely, you know, 12-hour days. I spend 50% of my life on call and available. Any day, no matter how hard I work or how compulsive I am or how much I worry all night long about every little patient or every little case I do, I can still any day find myself in court defending myself for what decisions I made or what I did. It is very rare to find a neurosurgeon who has not been sued. Very rare. And I'm sure that soon enough my time will come. I'm not sure how I'm going to deal with it. I'll probably decompensate and quit, but it might, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what will happen when I do finally get sued, because my work is me. It's an extension of myself. Just like most doctors, they take to heart everything they do. All neurosurgeons know that malpractice is not a prerequisite to being sued. Bad outcome or a known complication often leads to a suit. Medicine's not an exact science. Complications are a part of practicing medicine, and that's the reason that before we do any case, risk of surgery, bleeding, infection, increased neurological deficit, death. That's why every case you do, every surgeon goes over the known complications. And when some of these complications happen, because people aren't perfect, you can be sued. Physicians are being held to unrealistic standard of perfection. The emotional component of this and the fear of litigation cannot be underestimated in the feelings of doctors and physicians and the practice decisions they make, whether to stay here, whether to keep practicing, whether to move away, whether to go to a state where there's tort reform. More and more of my colleagues are finding the cost just too high, not just financially, but emotionally, psychologically, and the cost to our families. I hope that as leaders, you guys can find the wisdom to find the right solutions, and the legislation before you, I think, is probably a good beginning. But most importantly, we've got to find a way to assure our patients access to care before the system is so far gone that it can't be fixed. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Webby.
Thank you.
Now, we're going to break just for a second from the routine and allow the Senator Schrader to speak to the committee.
Dr. Schrader.
Thank you. Well, not a real doctor. Isn't that the word we use these days?
A real doctor who has a very fundamental understanding of healthcare delivery from the ground.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your letting me go ahead here. I'm Senator Kurt Schrader, Senate District 20, veterinarian in real life, as we have alluded to. So I have some understanding and some quite a lot of empathy with my colleagues when they talk about the practice of medicine. It's not an exact science, and we do our best, and thank goodness some of the great diagnostic opportunities we have nowadays and some of the techniques, we can do so much more. But nonetheless, we are human beings, and we operate on human beings, or in my case, other beings, and things have a way of happening that, despite your best efforts, aren't what you originally planned. So I'd like to thank you and for the opportunity to be here. It's a good opportunity. I think, as you all know, we have a tremendous health crisis here in the state of Oregon. I'm dealing with it down in the Ways and Means sector right now. I think every member of this body has been feeling it for the last 2 years. The healthcare crisis is affecting all Oregonians. Decreased patient access, increased costs. Right now, I think more than ever, we need to do something about medical liability in this state. It's just absolutely critical. You're hearing testimony already from the doctors and perhaps some patients and hospitals, insurers, members of the business community, how what was done in 1999 is unfortunately starting to impact this state, much like it's impacting other states around this country. We're losing doctors. We're losing doctors simply because they can't afford professional liability insurance. That's a very sad comment. That's a very sad comment. These men and women are dedicated to this profession, and to be forced out is, in my opinion, unconscionable. Since the Oregon Supreme Court lifted the statutory caps on non-economic damages, commonly referred to as pain and suffering, in 99, jury awards have just skyrocketed. And that was in direct contravention to what I was told as a member of this body when that vote was held on our floor and we tried to do something about it. While the number of patient complaints has been relatively stable, as you know, the premiums have just gone through the roof. The dramatic increase has projected new uncertainties and economic pressures onto physicians' practices, and you're hearing about that right now. It's resulted in practice closures, particularly in the rural parts of our state, and the exit of many skilled physicians from the Oregon market. The results of these pressures are becoming all too real for many Oregonians, particularly those outside the Willamette Valley. When expected mothers have to drive 40 minutes or more to visit an obstetrician, I think we're in crisis. Whole medical practices are forced to close. Insurance premiums, 117%. How many of us could absorb that sort of thing in our own lives? It'd be almost impossible. Patients fearing that they're going to lose access to the doctors. What sort of mental anguish does that put on them, quite frankly? Oregon's not unique. American Medical Association has found 17 other states that are also in dire need of medical liability reform. I think, however, our legislature is in a unique position to do something about it. We can prevent further erosion of our medical community and help control the rising costs of care for Oregon's patients. There are reasonable measures that we can do, that we can take. No one is suggesting that those who are harmed by negligence should not be compensated. I think that's an important point we've got to remember. But the current system has created a logjam of litigation that limits the access of patients with legitimate complaints from court. We have a court crisis already, while encouraging personal injury lawyers to push for larger and larger awards. The economic realities are harsh. Current litigation climate cannot continue for doctors and patients. Because of the crushing medical liability insurance premiums, Oregon is losing 33% of its obstetricians and midwives. I think some of you saw the article from the Oregonian, if you live in the metropolitan Portland area, the other day, the study that was done by OHSU. I don't know if it's been referred to here yet, but it's startling. 74% of the people that quit since 1999 practice outside of the Portland metropolitan area. I mean, this is huge, and half the women giving birth in the state live outside the Portland metropolitan area. I think Oregonians, no matter who you are worried about losing this access to their key providers, and that's wrong. Mothers should not have to worry if their family doctor is going to be there for them to deliver their children. Women should not have to wait months for a mammogram because radiologists are worried about being sued. Oregon cannot afford to lose some of our most talented neurosurgeons and trauma specialists to other states where medical liability reforms have already been enacted. I'd urge this committee to consider the costs, both in human and economic terms, of not acting now to reform our broken medical liability system. We used to be a shining star, and our star is gravely tarnished. A comprehensive reform package has been introduced that hopefully when passed will bring back some sense and fairness to physicians and their patients. We can all get on with our lives. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. We're going to go ahead and let the panel finish. I don't know if you want to stay for questions or if you need to get back to the business of trying to find how you're going to help us balance our budget.
I got to deal with another crisis downstairs, sir, if that's okay.
You're released to do so. Just remember who your friends are.
That would include me.
All right, everybody's hands up. Everyone. All right. Thanks, Kurt. Dr. Long.
Thank you. Members of the panel, I'm privileged to be here. I'm Dr. Long, president of the Oregon Chapter of American College of Surgeons, the current chairperson of the Oregon Chapter's Committee on Trauma, and chairperson of the Oregon State Trauma Advisory Board. I'm also a practicing trauma and cardiothoracic surgeon and trauma medical director at Legacy Emanuel Hospital in Portland, one of only two level one trauma centers in the state of Oregon serving the Oregon and the southern half of Washington State. I'm speaking on behalf of the surgeons and surgical specialists providing emergency surgical and trauma services at private hospitals in Oregon. I'll try to be brief. The points for understanding why there's a crisis in public access to emergency surgical and trauma care as follows. The doubling and tripling of medical malpractice insurance premiums for surgical specialists is number one. Number two is increasing numbers of uninsured and underinsured patients seeking emergency care through hospital emergency departments. Three, there's excessive emergency call burden, where there are specialists living in communities where there are few in number of these specialists, the fatigue of chronically being on call, and the lifestyle issues with their families and not being available for school issues, soccer games, et cetera, are becoming overwhelming. The number of patients that are coming to get care at nights and on weekends are increasing. Many busy surgeons, especially the ones who are getting older in age, are choosing to spend their time caring for their paying patients rather than their non-paying patients. Recruitment to Oregon, of surgeons of Oregon is becoming very difficult. There's low compensation by the medical insurance carriers as compared to other places in the country. The younger surgeons graduating from residency programs do not want to do emergency call. Medical students are not choosing a surgery as a career. My medical school back in Maryland, where I graduated from, 97% of the class chose to do a non-surgical career path because they don't like the lifestyle. Malpractice insurance costs to relocate specialists from other states are prohibitive. One neurosurgeon to look at moving from the Washington, D.C. area would have to pay $150,000 to $200,000 just to leave before picking up another $150,000 to $200,000 to cover his malpractice here in this state. It's impossible to relocate surgeons. Physician licensure in Oregon does not require emergency services or provision of emergency services. Hospital licensure as an acute care hospital does. So this is, in many ways, is a hospital and a public issue as well as it is a physician issue. The hospital infrastructure in Oregon does not infrastructure support for emergency services is decreasing in many hospitals because of the increasing cost of the hospital. They're repairing the infrastructure, making the services that it would be provided in such an environment more difficult for surgeons and places them at increased risk. There is a perception widespread among surgeons that emergency patients are more likely to sue surgeons for bad outcomes. And this places the surgeon in a sort of an ethical dilemma. Do you come in and do your best for someone in an emergency only to have them be in a potential adversary if the patient does not have an outcome that they view as favorable? There is the potential now of ruinous malpractice judgments against surgeons providing emergency care. Again, why take the risk? Patients with surgical emergency are being transferred unnecessarily from local hospitals to urban hospitals. We're getting patients now from California, Northern California, and parts of Washington because they can't find surgeons to take call, and they're being sent long distances away from their families and in communities where they normally would have gotten care, but people are not doing it anymore. This is a major problem in the Medford area. Northern California are not paying their bills, and yet they're sending their patients into Medford for care by surgeons who are having to provide that care. And then lastly, there's the option of Oregon Health Science and University surgeons, which already have malpractice protection, but they're unable to meet the local, state, and regional demands for emergency services. This trend in surgical availability in the local communities and regions is jeopardizing the integrity and the benefits of the Oregon trauma system established by this legislature in 1987. Oregon was the first Western state to create a statewide trauma system and was a model for other rural states around the country to follow. Our emergency health care crisis is now becoming worse. Our social contract with each other is breaking down. There's no trust in any political or legal structure. Nowhere is this more evident than the emergency and trauma system in Oregon. When surgeons look at emergency patients as potential adversaries who can take through legal procedures everything the surgeons own after the surgeon has provided his or her best efforts to deal with the patient's emergency, something is wrong with the system. We surgeons are used to providing our services first and then worrying about the patient's ability to pay for that care. The lack of malpractice tort limits protection is changing all this. Ironically, medical tort reform does not affect Oregon State revenues or expenses and cost the taxpayer nothing. We urge you to help reduce the risk for surgeons to provide emergency care to Oregon citizens. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Long. Gallen.
Mr. Chairman, I'll be very brief because I know we're already behind schedule, obviously. I would like to mention a couple things that are in fact in your packet and one or two things that are not. You have in your packet some public opinion material done by Bob Moore mid-January. I don't think this issue, however, is determined by public opinion, even though it does express what the citizens of the state and the voters of the state believe is truly a concern for access to medical services that they want. You also have in your packet two charts that give 20 years of data, actual Oregon data, of what has occurred in Oregon pre-CAP during the limitation over a 12-year period and what has happened since. To my knowledge, I'm sure this could change tomorrow, but to my knowledge, those who are concerned about this issue or might oppose the issue of reforming the legal system have not questioned the data. In fact, have used it in some presentations in that period. And what it really shows is that after limits on liability, there was a significant decrease in premiums in actual experience in the state of Oregon when the legislature chose to do that. One of the other things that often is mentioned as a reason for not considering some balance between unlimited awards and having some kind of balanced process is that someone who was injured as a child or a homemaker is not compensated for their economic losses, and you therefore have to have unlimited non-economic damages. There are actually people who are supposedly experts in estimating the life earnings for children or a homemaker or others that is in fact presented and calculated in awards. And there are examples in Oregon, specifically Oregon cases, where lost earning capacity for a child, for example, $1.7 million was awarded. Or another example of life expectancy that was given of almost 20 years, but the patient or the individual died 6 months after that. And $6 million in economic damages was awarded, $4 million in non-economic damages was awarded. And so that's really a red herring if that, in fact, does come up later. My only other comment, it would be that the Medical Association is willing to consider any reasonable proposal that may be put on the table. But we won't consider proposals that merely are shifting funds from one pot to another pot that have no real effect on the substantially increasing costs of litigation that are well above medical inflation or the CPI that physicians in this state cannot truly afford. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gallen. Committee questions, Representative Zanis.
The Scott, could you enlighten us as to when you're saying shifting money from one pot to another pot, some examples as to what you're opposed to seeing us consider?
Well, I said we would consider any real alternative proposal. What we expect to be proposed shortly, we've seen a draft proposal for a professional liability fund option based off of the attorney's professional liability fund. We believe it has substantial flaws. There are substantial differences between medical malpractice awards, and the it is exceedingly rare that attorneys, if they have a legal malpractice suit, in fact pay non-economic damages. Makes a substantial difference. Their average awards are substantially below the sorts of awards that we've seen in MedMal, even though the patient has been compensated for future economic losses, et cetera, et cetera. So I only mention that to say that we will look at any simple proposal with something of a jaundiced eye.
And one follow-up, please.
Follow-up.
It's my understanding from what I've heard from the panel today is that the OMA and their participants are looking for maintaining access for patients and for Oregonians. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And that we want to make sure that the premiums that are paid, however system or whatever model we have, are reasonable and affordable. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Further questions for the panel? Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For Dr. Wabey, is that correct? You're talking about medical malpractice rates or for neurosurgeons. Could you do you have any information, or could you distinguish between for neurosurgeons rates in the state of Washington versus the state of Oregon and in California versus Oregon?
Oh, I know they're higher in Oregon than in California. The rates that people are paying vary throughout the state depending on how big of a group you're in, how early in practice you're in. I know the guys in Eugene are paying close to $80,000 to $100,000 a year. My group is not as affected because we have some young partners, and the young partners bring down our total because you haven't had a long enough track record. So, you know, ours is running about $40,000 a piece for my group.
We'll get more information on that. That's a very, very good question, and something we very much would like to provide more information about. Since California has instituted its cap on pain and suffering non-economic damages, it has a much different slope for increase of malpractice medical liability premiums. It's significant. It's a model. They had an unstable system until they were able to institute a cap, and their system has stabilized, and their malpractice rates are significantly different from ours.
I do have a report from the American Association of Neurological Surgeons on the national data. They just did a survey, I believe it was September 2002. I can give you a copy of that if you'd be interested.
If you would.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Anderson, then Representative Kremel, then Representative Ackerman, if you also signal. Okay. Representative Anderson.
Dr. Powell, I just wanted to ask, you had mentioned the figure $1,500,000,000. Was that outstanding suits or litigation that's coming?
That's outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
In Oregon, which translates into a average prayer of $3.3 million. For the cases that have been filed, if physicians were to pay that right now, it'd be over $300,000 per claim.
Can I follow up?
You may follow up.
This is for Dr. Long, relating to the number of trauma specialists that you have and are losing. Do you have any idea what percentage of the practitioners are giving up their practice or?
It depends upon by specialty, sir. The most of these communities, trauma is about 5% of their business. If you go down to Medford, St. Charles and Ben, places like that, that's about 5% to at most 10% of their mm-hmm. business. And depending upon the number of surgeons willing to take call, Depends upon the shift of the call burden. So if you have five neurosurgeons in the community, then you would be on roughly one night and five. If two decide for reasons related to the malpractice that they're not going to take call, then it goes to one night and three. And so it depends upon the number of specialists available for each particular community is determines how much call one takes.
Can I follow on that?
Yes.
What I'm asking, I guess, is compare back to 5 or 10 years ago. From the number of doctors that you had practicing, how many do you expect to be practicing, say, in 2004?
I couldn't give you that number. I'd be guessing at that. I know a number of physicians in the southern portion of the state have left the state to practice in Nevada and other places in California. Most physicians who are staying are limiting their availability. This is what is happening. And this is, in turn, is causing the shift of patients moving from the local community toward the more urban centers to get their care, as opposed to being in the local environment.
Thank you.
Representative Prummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Briefly, Dr. Webby, you mentioned the fear of being sued, and I'm just curious. Either before you go into the operating room or as you're in the operating room, does that fear of being sued affect decisions that you make as a surgeon?
Not when I'm in the operating room. There's not enough time to think about anything other than exactly what you're doing. But it's more, you know, it's like anything. You focus and you do what you have to do at the time that you're doing it. But it's more when you're talking with your partners or your colleagues around the hospital and you see what's happening to people, or you'll hear about someone who got sued. I'm being, you know, a sub specialist. I get asked to be expert witness for cases. I get asked to review a lot of cases, and the things that people are getting sued for are most oftentimes just bad outcomes or known complications, and it just will, every time I'll get a request for records from my service, you know, I'll look at the case and I'll think, oh geez, what how could they be coming after me? I didn't do anything wrong. I did everything right with this case. And usually they're trying to sue, you know, the pediatrician who they think missed the brain tumor or whatever, but it's because we know that you don't have to do anything wrong to be sued. You can do everything exactly like you're trained to do and still get sued. I mean, it's not something that every minute of the day I obsess about, but you know, it's when it happens and when you see it happening to your colleagues, or somebody else is retiring because of it, or somebody else isn't doing intracranial, or nobody else will, they won't even revise a shunt, which is a basic second-year resident neurosurgical procedure. They won't revise a shunt if it's in somebody under 18 years old because it's pediatric. And now if they touch a pediatric patient, they're going to get in trouble if something goes wrong because, well, they should have sent it to a pediatric neurosurgeon. You know, seeing more and more of this kind of thing. And so that's really, you know, the effect that it has.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, if I may, one other question?
Yes.
And this is maybe digressing just a little bit, but we all know that one of the effectors of medical inflation is the cost for liability insurance and that sort of thing. And I heard a thoracic surgeon from McMinnville a couple of weeks ago make the comment that he would, as far as OHP patients are concerned and that sort of thing, that he would rather see them for free in, for example, the county medical clinic than in his own clinic because of the time for paperwork and that sort of thing. Would you, either one of you, Dr. Long, Dr. Webby, or Dr. Pell, if you'd like to weigh in, would you tend to agree with that or disagree with it? Or
we have set up at Emanuel Hospital, example, a multidisciplinary trauma clinic so that we can gather all the patients in one place and treat them in a more effective environment than we would in the individual physician's private office, because by the time you finish all the paperwork and meet all the necessary procedures that goes along with that, you're losing money on many of these patients, and you can't make it back. One physician, for example, patient was able to not speak English, but the other patient, patient's family member was there, could speak English, had an interview, and then all of a sudden was being sued for failure to provide an interpreter based on that. And he has to pay for the interpreter out of his own pocket. So, as I say, many of the physicians are washing their hands of this, and they're pushing it back toward the emergency department, which I'm responsible for finding a solution to at our particular hospital environment. So we've, in desperation, have set up a clinic which is run by the hospital, and the hospital is absorbing the cost of this overhead.
Representative, every physician I've talked to who's had an opportunity to go to third world countries to practice medicine has talked about what a wonderful experience it has been because they were able to provide patient care and they didn't have to provide, didn't have to think about defensive medicine. They didn't have to think about paperwork. They didn't have to think about those things that tend to interfere with the most efficient and appropriate services, which, of course, feels best to all of us in any profession.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Ackerman.
Yes, I think, Mr. Gallant, in your experience, is it your understanding that in a medical malpractice case that the plaintiff must support his or her claim by expert medical testimony? Is that your understanding?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ackerman, that's true, as does the defense.
And just have a couple follow-up questions, very short, and a little different subject, and again, in your experience, are you aware of any cases that resulted in large jury verdicts that could have been settled at substantially less? Do you detect any breakdown in the settlement process of these cases?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ackerman, this is kind of like, whether I'm beating my children or not. The process of making a determination whether a case is settled prior to a jury or not is one that is made through counsel, and they make their best judgment. I don't believe there's a particularly substantive point to your question. Have cases gone to court where an offer was made? The answer is yes. Have cases gone to court where the defense is offered a settlement? The answer to that is yes as well. So I presume it's a judgment call on the parties.
I've been informed of a case coming out of Douglas County where the claim could have been settled for, at least on two occasions, for policy limits of around $1 million. That was turned down by the insurance company, and the jury returned a verdict of $8 million. Are you familiar with that case?
I am aware of the case, not the specifics of the case. We really, unless you would like us to try to call the defense counsel for testifying before the committee, we really were here to address the overall problem of litigation costs that it has to those who pay health care premiums, to those who need access to care, and in trying to address what we believe to be a very real need to maintain our medical infrastructure. Otherwise, you may not be able to go anywhere and make a determination of whether you want to settle a case or not against a physician.
One follow-up and I'm through.
Okay, thank you.
I guess where I'm coming from is, you see any need in terms of so-called reform to set up a mandatory mediation process in medical malpractice claims in order to see if the case could be settled at its earliest possible point before the parties become too adversarial and before claims costs on both sides escalate?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ackerman, I think it would be a legitimate thing to debate, except for the Lakin decision. That in our counsel's opinion would make a mandatory program unconstitutional. So it sounds nice, but the court's decision in 1999 has put great restraints on the very policy-making elected officials of this state to address this issue without some kind of referral to the voters, and that is, in fact, within your authority. I'm glad you brought it up.
Thank you.
Thank you. Colleagues, just to remind you, we are now, given my estimation, about 32 minutes behind the schedule we were hoping to be on today. I do want to thank the panel very much, and we'll move to the second panel. The second panel Larry Mullins with Samaritan Health Systems, Rick Wopat from Samaritan, Dr. Wopat, and also Senator Frank Morris, if you'd come up as well. Welcome. Senator Morris, would you like to lead off?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Frank Morris. I wear several hats today. One hat is serving as the state senator from District 8. The other hat is as the current board chair of Samaritan Health Services. And the third hat is as a businessman. And my comments will be focused specifically from the perspective of the business community. With me is Larry Mullins, who is the CEO of Samaritan Health Services. He's on my left. And Dr. Rick Wopat, Vice President for Medical Affairs of Samaritan Health Services, on my right. Samaritan Health Services is an integrated organization of five hospitals in the Mid-Valley and on the Central Oregon coast, employing approximately 4,100 people. But putting on my businessman's hat today, what I would like to point out to you is the impact that this crisis has disproportionately on rural Oregon. And this has become most clear in this recent study that was done by Oregon Health Sciences University, which was released on March 3rd. It references a survey of Oregon obstetricians where 60% of Oregon's practitioners responded to the survey, and one-third said they plan to stop delivering babies in the next 5 years. But of significance in this study for rural Oregon is the fact that 74% of the practices outside the Portland area are those who have identified as being as having dropped obstetrics. And additionally, 10% of the current clinicians, or 80% of who practice outside Oregon, Portland, say they intend to quit doing deliveries in the next year or so. The person that was quoted, I think, that really lifts up this issue for rural Oregon is Dr. Law from Reedsport, and he was quoted in that article. In his reference, he says, referring to OB access, "It's important for our patients, and it impacts the health and economic viability of Reedsport as well. New businesses come in trying to recruit employees, but what young families will move here if they can't count on obstetric care? Rural Oregon depends on doctors that practice multidisciplines, family practitioners who practice obstetrics, and rural Oregon is suffering. And for our rural communities, attracting businesses and preserving businesses literally is a matter of civic life and death. I know as an employer, having been the CEO of a major corporation in Oregon, that care, medical care and health insurance was one of the primary, most important issues for employees. And the direction that we're going is not in the right direction. There is a direct connection between the economic viability of rural Oregon and access to health care. We are clearly in crisis, and we need solutions. Our state is burdened with a crisis in funding critical services, we all know, notably education. But what I can tell you is that we don't need another Doonesbury focus on Oregon's inability to deliver babies. And this is a serious issue that demands a serious solution.
Thank you, Senator Morris.
I'm going to have to leave. I've got another committee to figure out how we spend money.
Him too.
All right, everybody raise your hand again. No, we appreciate you being here and sharing your testimony with us, Senator Morris. Thank you. Mr. Mullins, are you up next?
I am, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman Williams and members of the committee, I'm Larry Mullins. I'm President and Chief Executive Officer of Samaritan Health Services. And like Senator Morris, I wear another hat here today as Chair-Elect of the Oregon Association of Hospitals as well. Samaritan Health Services oversees five Oregon hospitals in predominantly rural communities and has several physicians groups with us serving patients in the Mid-Willamette area and on the Oregon coast. I want to thank you for the opportunity to talk with you today about the crisis in medical malpractice liability facing those communities and those patients in those communities. Samaritan Health Services hospitals serve communities ranging in size from 15,000 to approximately 75,000. We have over 600 physicians and allied health practitioners who provide care at our respective hospitals. Samaritan Health Services, its physicians, and most importantly, the communities we serve, are facing a crisis. This is a real-time crisis that we are facing today. It's not in the future, but it's one that's before us presently. Our system faced a 300% increase in our liability insurance rates for 2003, going from just over $1 million to an excess of $3.4 million for the same level of coverage that we had during their prior period. This was predominantly based upon one claim event that had happened with one of the groups that we had associated with at one of the rural communities during that time. In trying to evaluate whether or not we could get some mitigation on the amount of the premiums that we were having to pay, we even evaluated the reality that the physician that was involved in the event no longer even resided within the state of the Oregon. The medical group composition that existed at the time that the event occurred no longer was in place, and the overall quality improvement and peer review process has changed, all to no avail. Our premium not only increased, we had difficulty obtaining any kind of premium availability for coverage at all. Other Oregon hospitals are facing increases in excess of 500% or higher. In this area of increasing health care costs and decreasing reimbursement, we do need to ask the question, where did this money come from, particularly in the challenging reimbursement and budgetary environment that we all face? It comes from the money that we could otherwise use to recruit vital nursing staff and other personnel to provide care to the patient. It comes from the money that we could use to provide quality care services and improve upon them to our community. And nationally, 20% of America's 5,000 hospitals have already cut back on services due to what many of them consider to be highly escalating insurance premiums. It also has an impact on us in another way, and that's one of the items that Dr. Long referred to you earlier on, and that's the impact on our ability to provide emergency care to our communities. As it becomes more and more difficult to identify and locate physicians to help staff our emergency room, it also becomes difficult to get them to agree to be on call. And one of the issues that primarily impacts them in terms of their call and their premium cost is the level of insurance that they have to have for that care. This is a problem not just for our hospitals, but for our doctors as well. The physicians servicing Samaritan Health hospitals increasingly cannot afford the cost of liability insurance. I personally already had physicians who practiced obstetrical care and other high-risk procedures question their future ability to do so if the liability situation does not improve. All of these physicians provide necessary services for their patients and for our hospitals. We know they're not perfect, but we really are going to be in a difficult position if we don't have them available to serve our communities. We cannot afford to lose them. But lose them if we will, if this state fails to address this medical malpractice issue. We don't want to be confronting a situation similar to what Las Vegas had in the past, where they had no trauma coverage capability for the city of Las Vegas, where patients had to be transported hundreds of miles, and that was related predominantly to an insurance coverage issue and the cost of those premiums within that state. Let me put a face on this. I know one surgeon right now who literally is waiting to find out not how much will his malpractice premium be, but whether he can even get malpractice coverage. And indeed, he does have some claims experience. But I can also tell you he's one of the few trauma systems surgeons that exist outside of the high metropolitan areas that's willing to provide care and to take on all cases. And as the doctor said earlier, when you take on those types of cases, there are risks and there are going to be outcomes from time to time that none of us want to see happen. But in any event, we're not even sure whether he's going to be able to receive the coverage so that we can continue with trauma care. We're one of three trauma centers that are level 2 categorization within the state of Oregon. There used to be about a half dozen level 2 facilities. Now I think there's three of us that are left. We recently achieved that. Should this trauma surgeon have to leave the community, it's a fair question to ask, will we be able to provide the level of care for the provision of that service? Or as Dr. Long pointed out, will we just stop providing that locally, and again, it will be forwarded to the metropolitan areas who are already fairly strained at what they do. Oregon is becoming known as the state with out-of-control malpractice rates. Other states have more effective tort reform laws, and physicians are choosing to go to those states instead of Oregon. My question is, if that happens, how will we cover the emergency rooms where we already have a difficult time doing that? How will we provide care locally, and what would be the impact on patients that have to be transported longer distances over greater periods of time for their care? The larger crisis is felt by Oregon's communities. If local physicians are no longer willing to provide care because of the cost of malpractice insurance and is driving them out of the business or out of the state, where will the residents in Lebanon go, Lincoln City, Corvallis, Albany, Newport, and other communities? Will expectant mothers be required to drive to distant locations for the delivery of their babies? Samaritan Health Services hospitals were established to provide necessary care within those communities. We cannot fulfill that mission, however, if the physicians cannot afford to practice in the state and if we don't have skilled physicians available to provide those services. Albany General Hospital, Good Samaritan Hospital in Corvallis, Lebanon Community Hospital, Samaritan North Lincoln, and Samaritan Pacific Community Hospital in Newport are all proud of the care and service they have provided over the years to their communities. They cannot continue to provide the quality service that they have so much pride in if they are forced to devote extraordinary resources to pay in liability insurance for themselves and for the premiums and have to cut other essential services. The Oregon Legislative Assembly must adopt meaningful liability reform, and it must do so now. The Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems is working with physicians and other insurers to develop legislation that will make a difference. Failure to take serious action will mean the loss of physicians we can never get back. Failure to take action will mean our hospitals will be challenged to offer the spectrum of care that we now provide. Most importantly, failure to effectively address the issue of liability reform will mean the people in Oregon's communities will not have access to the health care they need and deserve. Thank you again for the opportunity to address this critical issue.
Thank you, Mr. Mullins. Let's go ahead and hear from Dr. Wolpack.
Thank you, Representative Williams, Chair Williams, and the rest of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to come here and testify. I'm going to try to take a little bit of a different bent on this and talk about how this affects our ability to care for the whole community in which I live. I'm a family physician. I've been a family physician in Lebanon for 24 years. I deliver babies, do the full spectrum of care. For the last 15 years, I've been integrally involved in helping develop the Oregon Health Plan. I had the honor of serving with Representative Bates on the first Oregon Health Services Commission to help develop the prioritized list, and feel that we've done a great deal to improve care to our communities. For the last 10 years, I've dedicated much of my time to working in Linn, Benton, and Lincoln counties to develop a regional health system that can deliver health care to the people of our communities, regardless of how it's paid. As part of that, we've developed a system that we provide care to all in our region, regardless of their ability to pay. This includes helping to establish free clinics in Lebanon, Albany, Corvallis, and in Lincoln City, and to provide, and in fact, tomorrow evening I have the opportunity to work in that clinic again. I'm very proud of what we've done in our region, and I think it has been a good effort to help care for all. So what does this have to do with liability insurance, you might ask? Our Samaritan Health Services has made the commitment to provide care for all people in our service area, and our ability to do this and our capacity to do this is dependent on our ability to pay for it. You already heard Mr. Mullins explain that we saw a $2.4 million increase in liability costs between 2001 and 2002. In Lebanon, we've seen rise of 200% to 300% with absolutely no increase in claims. That additional $2.4 million that we're paying in liability insurance is going to be taken out of our system. The increased insurance cost reduces our ability to care for all and to care for the poor. This money is no longer available for providing free medications to those patients we see in the free clinic, or providing free diagnostic and treatment to those patients we see in that clinic, for funding some of our preventive services like smoking cessation, for supporting our Nurse in the Church program and for supporting our regional maternity case management program. If it continues to rise, if the rates continue to rise at the rate they are now, we would expect that our obstetrical providers in Sweet Home in Lebanon would have to reassess whether they could continue to do care. At this point, because we're part of Samaritan Health, we've been able to handle some of those premiums. Last week, I worked in a free clinic. I saw a young lady who was pregnant and depressed and needed health care and had no coverage. This morning, I spent the morning with the medical directors of the Oregon Health Plan, trying to figure out how we can squeeze more blood out of a turnip or a beet and try to figure out how we can continue caring for those people under the Oregon Health Plan. And last week I spent 2 days working with the American Hospital Association on how we can further care for people in our communities. You know firsthand how the financial, how tight it is in the state financially. You've probably heard or read about issues related to Medicare. The 300% increase in liability insurance may be the straw on the camel's back. I don't personally like to wear ties this morning, so I got up and I tried to pick a tie that I think means something. And this morning I was looking through my ties and I picked one out that says, is designed by Michael, age 13, and it says, "Tomorrow belongs to today's children." And I believe that if we want to continue to care for all the citizens in our area and in our counties, we're not going to be able to sustain that if we continue to see the rise in medical liability that we've seen. So what's the solution? Briefly, I want to be very clear that I support people who have been injured in any way by the medical system through negligence to be paid for that. But the system is broken. It doesn't work. 43 cents of every dollar that's paid into the system ends up in the patient's hands. 53 cents of that dollar ends up in administration. 43% of liability costs are spent defending frivolous suits. So the system is not working. We're spending a lot of money. It's not getting to where it needs to go. The California MICRA experience is an example of how one piece of the fix is limitation on non-economic damages. It's not a simple fix. It is a complex fix. We must put an end to this malpractice problem, this malpractice crisis. We cannot simply wait for a correction because it's on us now, and we will lose physicians. We will lose our ability to care for those people in our communities that we have strived to do for so long. We must adopt meaningful tort reform, and we must do it now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Wolpat. Questions of the committee for this panel? Okay, gentlemen, thank you very much. Our next panel will include Dr. Bill Gallagher, Jim Dorrigan, and Ron Stegman. And I have a note here that Representatives Bates and Monis Anderson. Oh, she's here. Please come forward, Representative Monis Anderson. I don't see Representative Bates.
He was going to wait until I sat down.
Do we have enough chairs?
I can. You want me to move?
No.
Here we go. Okay. Why don't we go ahead and start with Representative Monis Anderson, and when Representative Bates comes, we'll add him.
Great.
Please proceed.
Thank you. I'm Lori Monis Anderson, State Representative from Gresham District 50. Mr. Chair and members of the Judiciary Committee, thank you so much for this opportunity today to discuss the need for medical liability reform. As a member of this legislature, as well as a registered nurse, I am very worried about the deteriorating state of health care in our state. As Oregon faces this extreme revenue shortfall, it threatens our commitment to our most vulnerable. And we also have a new threat, and that's the rapidly rising costs of medical liability insurance, and that's causing our health care system to break down. It truly is a crisis. We have a revenue crisis. We also have a crisis regarding medical liability insurance. I've been listening to the testimony beforehand, and it is extremely compelling. The insurance costs are so high for many of our physicians, and they are leaving our state. They are leaving our government programs, such as the Oregon Health Plan, because the reimbursement rates cannot keep pace with the rising premiums. Practices are closing and cutting back services. As you've already heard, patients are finding fewer choices for providers in the market. They just aren't there. And if you read the paper yesterday, I believe it was, a woman who is pregnant needs to drive 40 miles now to Coos Bay because in Reedsport their OBGYN's clinic has closed. There is little doubt in my mind that now is the time to act. We must make the necessary reforms to ensure that health care providers can really focus on what they do best, and that's to take care of their patients. We don't want them focusing on whether their insurance costs are going up, and that determines whether they're going to give service or not, or the threat of litigation. So I want to thank you, and I will turn it over to the next person.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Are you going to stay with us through panel?
Just a little bit, yes.
Okay, good. Well, when you need to leave, feel free. Dr. Gallagher, are you up next?
Yes, sir.
Okay,
and
thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Bill Gallagher, and I, too, wear two hats. I'm an orthopedic surgeon, and I've been in this town practicing since 1976. I'm also president and chairman of Northwest Physicians Mutual Insurance Company and have been for many years. I'm going to be very brief because you're going to have some data shown to you, which will take up most of the time. As you've heard over and over, there is a crisis of availability of health care in Oregon. This is especially true for women's health care, but we need to keep in mind that this lack of access to health care will affect men, women, and children. No doubt, you have all heard that the main reason for this problem is that the insurance companies are raising premiums out of greed, trying to recoup their losses from the stock market. You have also heard, or will hear again tomorrow, that the only thing that needs to be done to solve this problem is for the doctors to form their own insurance company, just like the lawyers did. I hope this short segment today will dispel these myths for you and leave you with the understanding that the insurance company is not the culprit in this crisis. In 1983, 12 Salem doctors signed their names on a $1 million note and used the monies to start a professional liability insurance company, Northwest Physicians Mutual. My colleagues and I did this for several reasons. First and foremost, we wanted to be in control of our own destiny. Based on history, we anticipated that something like this present problem could arise. And we wanted a company that would not run away from us when things got tough. All medical providers who own a policy are owners of the company, and its owners have funded MPM since the beginning. No state money has been used in support of the doctors or the company. So, as you can see, we have already formed our own company. In fact, 60% of the physicians in the United States are insured by their own companies. Why do we need to form another? One of the big advantages for us in owning our own company is that we can set rates at the appropriate level without the pressure of having to make as much money as possible. There simply is no reason to gouge ourselves. We have over the years raised and lowered our premiums as conditions dictated. But our philosophy has always been to keep the premiums as low as is prudent. This worked very well for us for 16 years. We did not begin to lose money until 1999, the year that the cap was taken away. And since that time, we have been unable to raise premiums fast enough or high enough to be profitable. MPM has lost money the last 4 years. Owning our own company has meant that we have not fled the state like seven other companies have done, but we recently did have to ask our owners for an infusion of capital. We really don't know where the losses are going, except that we know they're going up. And we really don't know how high the premiums need to be to keep up with the losses. In 2 years, we have raised rates on average 100% and up to 200% for some specialties. When the cap went away, predictability went away as well. Rate making is now an actuarial crapshoot. Claim severity in Oregon has made medical liability insurance losses extremely volatile. Since Oregon lost the cap on non-economic damages in 1999, total claim payments by Oregon insurers have increased fourfold. I'm happy to say to you that what we are asking will be less troublesome than what others are asking you to do. Refreshingly, I'm sure, our request will have nothing to do with the budget. We don't want any money. All we want is for you to bring about some common sense reform to Oregon's legal system. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Gallagher. We'll break just momentarily to allow Dr. Bates, Representative Dr. Bates, to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I always feel a little strange coming and testifying in front of you, especially you, Mr. Chair, and your compatriot in crime over here, Representative Shetterly, you know. But I always enjoy it.
Seriously.
I know.
I want to know what he's been up to that I haven't.
Yeah. We always want to know what you guys are up to. But thank you for allowing me to testify today. I'll keep my testimony very short. I have a prepared statement, and I'll probably add a few points to it as I go along. As you may well guess, I'm here in my position primarily as a physician, not as a representative. And as you may well guess, I've been directly impacted by the issues in front of you today, as most of the, if not all, the physicians in Southern Oregon across the state have. Oregon faces one of the gravest care crises since I've started practicing medicine here 25 years ago. Our insurance costs are skyrocketing at levels we can't control. The coverage problem is exacerbated by the withdrawal of many of the insurers that we used to have here in the Oregon market. We're down to two now, as you're probably already aware, and we have very few options for obtaining malpractice insurance. There's little relief in sight from these staggering insurance premiums, and my fellow physicians are being forced to make drastic career decisions about who they see, how they see those patients, and some of them have frankly quit practice over this issue. To me, it's a real tragedy when a physician decides to leave the state of Oregon to practice somewhere else for the primary purpose that insurance is more affordable. And I'm hoping that this committee will be able to act in a way that will bring this crisis to an end for us in the state. I'll give you a couple of examples of things we've run into just recently in Southern Oregon. One of our biggest problems in Southern Oregon, being on the I-5 corridor, is taking care of trauma patients. Now, these people come in primarily from automobile accidents, but other things also. And we have to have orthopedists to set the bones, anesthesiologists to put them to sleep, chest surgeons to work on their chest trauma. We have to have neurosurgeons for head injuries. And head injuries are very common in automobile accidents. We have about four neurosurgeons capable of operating on those conditions. And we've just lost one because his premium for this year is $269,000. He chose not to carry on his operative practice and felt that it was inappropriate for him to be practicing, obviously, without malpractice insurance in those situations. He could make a good living without operating or limiting his operations to non-head cases. And that's the kind of decisions we're seeing made all over the state. The obstetric situation in Southern Oregon is no different. You all know about the Roseburg situation, I'm sure. In Southern Oregon, the Medford area, we have... got to a point that no family practitioners except two are delivering babies, and they're getting ready to quit because of malpractice. We have specialists still delivering, but they are limiting their practices also. And that's just two of the major fields you're looking at. When someone comes to the state to be recruited, and I'm actively recruiting physicians right now, one of the first questions they ask is what my malpractice will cost me. And when we tell them, many of them say, you know, I just think I'll go somewhere else. So it is a significant factor. Mr. Chair, I could go on for a long time. I don't want to bore you with things you've heard before. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to take them.
Thank you. Dr. Bates, I assume you have another responsibility, or are you planning to stay through the remainder of the panel?
Mr. Chair, I'm in committee right now, and I have to get back to it.
Okay, we'll excuse you back to committee, obviously. Is there any particular question that anyone wants to pose to Dr. Bates before we let him go? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you for hearing my testimony. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, we'll go back on track now, and who was next up? Was it going to be you, Jim?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jim Dorrigan. I'm Chief Executive Officer of Northwest Physicians Mutual Insurance Company. We're a local medical malpractice insurance company owned by our policyholders and located in Salem, Oregon. We insure approximately 35 to 40% of the physicians in the state. Today I'm going to talk about the medical malpractice liability insurance crisis, and I think it's been pretty well established there is a crisis, but I'm going to show you the symptoms, the causes, and some solutions that you're going to be considering for the crisis. This is not the budget deficit that you're dealing with in the state. This is the demand in 465 suits with an average prayer of $3.2 million. If a physician is sued in the state, the average of the suit will be $3.2 million. This is based on an analysis of Northwest Physicians Mutual and CNA and the 4,500 Oregon doctors that we insure. If we were to clear the books on the prayers and outstanding lawsuits right now, it would mean an assessment of $334,000 per physician. The symptoms. The AMA has declared Oregon to be one of 12 states in crisis, and this was in June of 2002. Last month, an additional six states were added to that list. So if we're looking at recruiting physicians or maintaining physicians in the state, this is very definitely a serious problem. If you look at the states that were included in the AMA's initial list, it includes Florida, Georgia, Mississippi, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Texas, Washington, and West Virginia. The reason that we're not seeing the problem of availability in Oregon of anybody willing to write insurance is because we've had two major carriers that have stayed in the state, CNA and Northwest Physicians Mutual, and we continue to insure physicians in this state. Nationwide, St. Paul pulled out of the medical malpractice insurance business. They were the major writer in many of the crisis states, leaving a huge gap in those states. Malpractice insurance rates, we hear 100% to 300%, but rates are on average increased in the last 2 years well over 100%, and in many specialties 300 to 400%. Underwriting is much tighter. Physicians with claims problems, practice problems, medical board problems are having very difficult time getting coverage. Few new insurers are willing to write in Oregon. Prior to the loss of the cap on non-economic damages, Oregon was viewed as a very favorable state, and we had many carriers willing to come into the state. Since 1999, we've seen the St. Paul, NorCal, Washington casualty withdraw from the market. The causes, why is this happening? High jury awards, unfavorable court rulings. The major court ruling was the Lakin versus Senco products case, removing the cap on non-economic damages. Huge demands in lawsuits. It's not unusual today for a physician to be served with a lawsuit asking $20 to $50 million in the prayer, and even if they buy the major or the most available coverage in the market, which would be $5 million, the demands in the lawsuits today, especially in the higher risk surgical specialties, exceed the available insurance by multiples. Insurance companies losses in 99, 2000, 2001, and I'll add 2002. Now, what's driving those losses? It's not the stock market. It's the indemnity payment increase, the amount that insurance companies paid out. In 1998, all insurance companies licensed in the state paid out $15 million in losses. In 2001, almost $61 million in losses. That's a fourfold increase in indemnity payments, plus rising expenses in terms of the loss adjustment or defending the cases. The system and the costs are escalating very rapidly. Here's a look at what the all Oregon licensed insurers reporting to the state of Oregon did in terms of their numbers. As you can see, from 98 to 2001, the premium increased from $38 million to $50 million, but the gross cash flow or the loss on operations from these companies in 98, there was a $15 million cash flow profit. In 2001, there was a $21 million loss. So in other words, $21,140,000 more was paid out than was taken in. 2002, all companies haven't reported yet, but I anticipate that the numbers will be higher and the losses will be more severe. Also, the rates will be much higher, but I still don't think the rates will have caught the losses. We hear about what would happen if we instituted a fund to cover the losses. Over the last 5 years, if we had a fund in the state of Oregon, the physicians would have paid roughly twice what they paid in malpractice premiums. What's happened is the losses have been absorbed by the insurance carriers in the state. Investment returns. This is not an investment return issue. I participated as part of the governor's task force on medical professional liability insurance. We looked at the carriers. We looked at the investment patterns of insurance companies. And the two major carriers in the state, our returns varied from 3.6 to 9.6% over the last 10 years. This is a period when the S&P ranged from a loss of 11.8 to a high of 37.5. This is simply because 85% plus of insurance companies' investments, including ours, are in the bond market. We are impacted by the lower interest rates being paid, but this is not being driven by the stock market, as some will tell you. Indemnity payments. These are our indemnity payments paid in the state of Oregon. In 96, we paid out $3 million in losses for an average of just over $101,000 per case. In 2001, we paid out over $18 million in losses for an average indemnity payment of over $300,000 per loss. The 2002 numbers, I haven't finalized those, but the numbers are increasing again. Open cases. Here's what an obstetrician can face today in Oregon. If they're sued, the average demand in their case is $9.5 million. All other physicians are sued for $2.8 million on average. This is a huge problem for physicians practicing obstetrics and a huge problem for other physicians in the state. The solution, recognition by the medical profession, legislature, and the public of the problem. The medical profession definitely is recognizing and feeling the pain of this issue. The legislature now is addressing the issue, and the public is definitely seeing the problem as seen by the polling and also the access problems that we're seeing. Implementation of a comprehensive tort reform package, continued focus on patient safety and risk management. I know that our operating budget, we spend 21% of our operating budget on risk management issues, and it is definitely a focus of ours, and developing a coalition, unified coalition, to implement change. Healthcare liability reform. These are the core liability reforms that have proven to be successful in California and that are being proposed on the national level, but we need to act locally. This is a local issue and a local problem in Oregon. The $250,000 cap on non-economic damages has proven to be effective, collateral source offset, periodic payments of future damages, shortened statute of limitation, modification of joint and several liability, and contingency fee limitations. And these are all issues that you're going to be dealing with. Tort reform works. California micro-reforms have improved the availability and affordability of health care. Since 1976, California rates are up 167%, while other states on average increased over 500%. From 1988 through 98, Oregon rates decreased 50% as a result of the 1987 tort reforms passed by the legislature in Oregon. In 2002, rates increased 12 to 15% in states with non-economic damage caps. In the same year, last year, rates increased by 44% in states without non-economic damage caps. This problem is well outlined in the July 2002 Health and Human Services report. Here's a case study in point that shows exactly what happens when tort reform is enacted. As you can see, before tort reform was enacted in 87, rates were increasing in Oregon at a very rapid rate. After the legislature acted in 87, we went through a 10 to 12 years of a very stable market in the state. After the Lakin decision in 99, rates have again started escalating, and if you look at the escalation of those rates, they match very closely with the escalation of losses being paid by insurance companies in the state. Impact on the public, we've heard from physicians today, and physicians want to retire early. If they can, they're closing their practices. Recruiting physicians to Oregon, almost impossible. Physician availability for certain specialties, there's a six-month wait and an inability to bring in subspecialists into the state. Increase in defensive medicine, you bet. Cost is paid by the public in the form of higher health care costs. Industry responses, increasing rates, tightened underwriting, focus on claims management, focus and targeted risk management. I know that we've in this year are offering over 50 risk management programs targeting specific patient safety issues throughout the state, focusing on specialties and problem areas. The OMA and CNA also are offering well over 25 programs. So the risk management patient safety issue is definitely part of the focus of our industry. Rate comparisons. Here, you hear a lot of rate numbers kicked around, but here are the numbers for Northwest Physicians Mutual. Family practice, $4,100. In 2003, $9,800. Family practice with obstetrics increased from $8,500 in 99 to $32,000 in 2003. Obstetrics, $21,895 in 99, increasing to $61,203 in 2003. So in the higher risk specialties, we've seen rates increase by multiples of 3 to 4. Here's a look at what OBGYN premiums are across the country. Florida, Texas, Michigan, New York, Illinois, and Pennsylvania are all now well over $100,000. You can see what our rates are. In Oregon, we write also in California and Idaho, but Oregon, our rates are $61,203. In California, Northern California, a state with tort reform package, our rates are significantly less at $39,000. And in Idaho, a state that is much less litigious than California or Oregon, with also a cap on non-economic damages, our rates are $25,000.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Shetterly.
Question, do you know the states there that indicate substantially higher premiums than we have in your reporting? How many of those states are damage cap states?
None of those.
Okay.
In 2001, of the top 10 verdicts, three were medical malpractice cases, Texas, New York, and a second one in New York. In 2002, the top 10 verdicts, there were four medical malpractice cases. As you know, also, that if you think that it can't happen in medical malpractice or it can't happen in Oregon, we can see also that number five on the list is a $150 million verdict in Oregon on a tobacco case. But the medical malpractice cases may be shortly behind, and if we start getting verdicts in that range, it's going to completely shut down the industry regardless of the funding mechanism. Seven of the top 20 awards in 2001 and 2002 were related to medical liability, with a total cost exceeding $3 billion. This is a serious problem. We need to address it in Oregon. We need to address it now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Dorgan. Mr. Stateman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Switch seats here real quick. Sir, we have written testimony prepared for you here, but in lieu of the time and the fact that you've got a lot of other people on this dais, if you don't mind, we would just like to paraphrase some of what we have in the written testimony. Please. Sharon Robinson here is with me. I am the Vice President in charge of business development for CNA Health Pro. Sharon is the Chief Actuary for CNA Health Pro, and I'm going to let Sharon do some of the paraphrasing here, if that's all right.
Great.
Sure. Thank you for the opportunity to address the committee. The CNA group of insurance companies is one of the largest writers of commercial property and casualty insurance in the United States. We have been the sponsored insurance carrier for the Oregon Medical Association for 32 years, covering approximately 2,000 physicians across a wide variety of medical specialties throughout the state. We work closely with the OMA on a variety of key initiatives, including risk assessment and the management and education and training. I would like to provide my verbal comments on highlights of what is in our written testimony with regard to issues of cost affecting medical malpractice in Oregon and throughout the country. Our testimony and that of others, I'm sure, highlight certain statistics on the deterioration in medical malpractice claim costs nationwide and in Oregon. This is documented with data from the Physicians Insurance Association of America and from the National Practitioners Data Bank, and it's also consistent with what we observe in our own CNA data with regard to medical malpractice in Oregon. There are statistics cited in our written testimony concerning escalation in average claim costs, where the PIAA specifically identifies an increase since 1988. Average severities, average claim costs of $130,000, which had risen to over $300,000 in 2001. That PIAA study also indicates that claim payments exceeding $1 million had expanded from less than 1% of overall paid claims in 1985 to nearly 8% in 2001. Not surprisingly, the increasing costs have resulted in deteriorating financial results for medical liability insurers. According to AM Best, the medical malpractice combined ratio in 1994 was 97.6%. By 2001, that combined ratio had risen to 153%. That means that for every dollar of premium collected in 2001, insurers will ultimately incur $1.53 in losses and expenses. Projections for 2002 combined ratio are only slightly better at 140%. The deterioration that we're observing industry-wide and in the state of Oregon, we believe, is driven by increases in claim severity, meaning the increases in individual claim payments, as opposed to how many claims are being made. For example, in our CNA data over a 10-year period, we saw overall losses very stable during the early to mid-90s in the range of $7 to $9 million annually. Then, beginning in 1999 and forward, we see a near doubling in the range of $15 to $17 million annually in overall losses, with no substantial change in the number of underlying physicians that we insure. Similarly, the average indemnity payment associated with those losses, previously in the range of $200,000 to $250,000, is now in the range of $300,000 to $350,000 annually. The deterioration that we see in the overall losses and severity is something that we see broadly across class and throughout the state. It's not really attributable to any specific business segment. Critics of the insurance industry have asserted that the increased rates that we are seeing in response to the rise in claim costs are attributable to past investment losses and insurance companies attempting to recoup prior investment losses in the stock, particularly in the stock market. In fact, I'd like to point out that approximately 80% of medical liability insurers' assets are in bonds, including treasury bonds. only 9% of insurance of medical malpractice insurance portfolio is made up of equity investments, with returns consistent with that of the overall S&P 500. Furthermore, in the business of insurance, Oregon law mandates that insurance investment programs take into account the safety of the principal of the insurer, investment yield and return, stability in the value of the investment, liquidity necessary for expected business needs of the insurer, and investment diversification according to standards established by the insurance division. It is a customary practice in actuarial pricing for insurance to take into consideration prospective investment income opportunity. However, recoupment of past investment losses is typically prohibited by law as well as actuarial professional standards. In fact, the Oregon Insurance Administrator must ensure that rates are not excessive, inadequate, or unfairly discriminatory. Medical malpractice rates are based on estimates of expected future losses and expenses, as well as prospective investment income. It is true that interest rates influence insurance premium and that declining insurance rates contribute to increased prices. However, with respect to the current escalation in insurance rates in Oregon and in other states, the increase in rates associated with declining interest rates is far outweighed by the increase associated with rising claim severity. I would also like to comment on issues regarding the fairness of the current physician's classification structure and its implications on the creation of a professional liability fund for physicians. We understand that the Oregon Plaintiffs Bar has suggested that the current physician's classification structure is unfair and has recommended that a professional liability fund be formed, in which all physicians would be required to participate and would be charged the same or similar rates. The grouping of risks with similar risk characteristics for the purpose of setting prices is a fundamental precept of any private voluntary insurance program. The standard of practice for the actuarial profession identifies three primary purposes of a risk classification system. These are to be fair, to permit economic incentives to operate and encourage widespread availability of coverage, and to protect the insurance system's financial soundness. The concept of fairness or equity is defined as appropriately reflecting the differences among the costs of identifiable risk characteristics. In other words, a risk classification system is equitable if material differences in costs for risk characteristics are appropriately reflected in the rate. It is not the purpose of the risk classification to identify unusually good and bad risks or to reward or penalize certain groups of risks at the expense of others. Risk classification is intended simply to group individual risks having reasonably similar expectations of loss. The consequences of failing to reflect such cost differences are classification subsidies and market dislocation. Altering the classification system to ignore cost differences does not remove costs from the insurance system, but merely reapportions it among those insureds which choose to remain in the system. The ability of the private insurance market to make coverage broadly available requires that premiums charged accurately reflect the true underlying costs associated with each risk group. Charging excessive prices to lower cost risk groups will create an incentive for these risks to seek alternatives to an overpriced product, perhaps driving them out of the insurance market altogether. Inadequate rates available to higher cost risk groups will limit an insurer's willingness to offer widespread coverage. In the material that we provided with our written testimony, there is an exhibit which illustrates from CNA's experience in the state of Oregon what we see as clear differentiation in cost across different medical specialties. It displays the average annual cost associated with insuring a physician from a sampling of different medical specialties. You'll see a progression of average costs from a lower risk specialty such as psychiatry, around $1,200, to a higher risk specialty such as neurosurgery of around 39,000. The bolded bar going across the chart at about 5,000 represents the average loss costs for all specialty groups combined, including those not specifically shown on the chart. Consistent with standard actuarial practice, it is appropriate to recognize such disparate costs among different medical specialties. In fact, it is essential to an insurer's willingness to provide a market for coverage. With our comments regarding to the proposal of a professional liability fund, with regard to cost, I just want to first point out that our concern with the proposal is that it is not one which would be expected to reduce overall costs of the medical liability system. It would simply redistribute costs among those in the system, causing significant subsidies among lower risk classes to subsidize higher risk specialties. In fact, the PLF may increase overall system costs if private insurers remain in the system, providing excess coverage over the PLF, and additional overhead and duplicative expenses are entered into the system. Regarding tort reform initiatives being contemplated by the committee, we realize that these include a number of potential modifications, including modifications to joint and several liability, standards and disclosure requirements for expert witnesses, limitations on contingency fees, deduction of collateral benefits from medical damage awards, modification of comparative negligence laws, determination of interest rates on judgments, and mandatory periodic payments in certain cases. Our experience with California's MICRA has demonstrated that effective tort reform can promote stability in the marketplace and have a very positive impact on the state medical liability environment. We just do want to point out that such medical malpractice reforms generally require a period of time before the intended benefits can be fully quantifiable with respect to insurance pricing. It's only when such reforms have been successfully defended in court that we are able to reflect them in our pricing, which means that it may be several years until any impact on costs may be fully realized in insurance rates. Ultimately, we believe that there are four criteria that are essential to the existence of a viable physician medical liability insurance marketplace. These are rate adequacy, consistency and predictability in the claims and legal environment, the absence of onerous insurance regulation, active physician participation in the review of medical standards and conduct, and the resulting quality of medical care. We commend the committee's efforts to provide a stable medical liability marketplace in Oregon, and thank you for the opportunity to provide our comments.
Thank you, Ms. Robinson and Mr. Stegman. I'll open it up with this panel just to give the committee a bit of a roadmap. We're going to dispense with the next panel. I've communicated with them by note that we'll try to squeeze them back in on Wednesday to accommodate the time, but we're going to finish today, if the committee can stick with me, with the final panel that's listed on the agenda. So with that, I'm going to open it up for some limited questions given the time, but want to give that opportunity. Representative Prozanski and then Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of quick ones, and the panel can get back to us if it would be easier to do so. I have questions regarding Northwest Physicians' statements that were made that it went into existence in 1983. Caps went into effect in 1988. I'd like to see numbers as to what happened between 83 and 88. Because what I heard was that it was not until 1999 that we saw the bottom fall out and that there's been losses by Northwest. So I'd like to see what type of numbers you had for those first 5 years where there were no caps in place. The second thing is there was some claim. There's a one of the slides showed the various states for the OB, GYN premiums for multiple states. I'd like to have the data for all 50 states and have caps listed as to which ones have caps. I'm assuming that the numbers that are before us or the states that are listed were not in priority or hierarchy of actual premiums and was just selected as to give us a flavor of what's happened in other states. So if y'all could do that, I'd appreciate that.
Okay, Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have one question. I think maybe Dr. Gallagher,
if you can answer this, would be terrific. Nice to see you again, by the way. It's been represented to me that if we went to a PLF type of scenario with monopolization, that it would, all of these medical liability problems would go away. Would you share that view, or would you say that's erroneous?
I'd say that's erroneous. The PLF type of fund would do nothing for physicians for lots of reasons. One, it is just a cost shifter, as was just pointed out. It doesn't do anything to stop the problem that we have today, and that is the size of the awards and the settlements. Physicians' losses, medical malpractice losses, are much higher than what we see for the PLF and the legal findings. I think, the average premium, I think that the lawyers are paying is like $2,000 or $2,200 or something, and the average for a physician is around $8,000 or $9,000. So, it's different figures. It's apples and oranges. Physicians would have to buy excess insurance over the top of whatever a PLF fund would provide. The problem is the size of the jury awards and the size of the non-economic losses, and it we could create all kinds of different companies and programs, but all it will do is shift cost. It won't solve the problem.
So if I may,
you may.
Quickly, Mr. Chair, so monopolizing, for example, if Northwest Physicians Mutual were offered a monopoly in the state, and sorry, CNA, but if you were to go away, would that wouldn't solve any of the problem, you don't think, either?
Well, I think one thing you would not want to do is perhaps insure every physician in the state of Oregon. We certainly don't, and neither does CNA. We have an underwriting department, and we work very hard at underwriting risks, and we would find some positions for many reasons we may not want to insure. I think the last thing that you'd want to do is have a program that has to take everybody, say physicians, every physician in the state. I don't think we as an insurance company would be doing our job correctly if we were not allowed to underwrite the risk that we take.
Thank you.
Representative Ackerman.
Yes, Dr. Gallagher, I just have maybe two or three short questions. There was a note in one of the materials we received entitled Average Demands in Open Cases June 2002, showing demands of $9,500,000 for OBGYNs and all others at $2,800,000. Now, these are just demands that are made in the pleadings. These aren't funds you've paid out, are they?
That's correct. They're in the pleadings.
Can you provide us with the amount of money that was actually paid out on those claims for our hearing purposes?
The majority of those claims are still pending. It was 6 months ago we had those cases pending. That was the demand sought in the lawsuit.
Okay, thank you. And a couple of last questions. I was curious about your statement that you stated 1983 Northwest Physicians was formed and consisting primarily, I guess, of physicians, and that since you're in that model, that we need not go into a professional liability format. Was that basically your analogy?
Yes.
Could you tell me a little bit more about the company? That is, do you do business in other states and have other lines of insurance?
We have no other lines of insurance at this time. We did do some workers' comp insurance for a while. We don't do that anymore. We had some office property type insurance, and we don't do that. So we are single line medical liability, professional liability. We have approximately 650 physicians in California, maybe 350 in Idaho, 50 or 60 in Alaska.
I know this is specific.
20 in Washington.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I think that answers my question. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. We appreciate the panel. At this time now, I'd like Dr. Cave, Dr. Bernardo, Von Brandon.
I thought that might be the answer.
And I think J.L. Wilson, if he's here. We're going to have somebody come out there and try to
figure out who we are.
Figure out who you are. You know, why don't you just pull the? Why don't you just go ahead and pull those, and we won't worry about putting the new ones up. That's okay. We're okay. We'll go ahead and move forward. Who's going to lead off on this panel?
Mr. Chair, I am.
Please begin.
I understand my job here is to summarize quickly. You've all been very patient. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your time so far. My name is Dr. Colin Cave. I'm a head and neck surgeon with Northwest Permanente in the Portland area, and I'm also president-elect of the Oregon Medical Association. As we near the end of this hearing, I would like to briefly summarize the situation as we see it. You can't get medical care when your doctor's not there. Every indicator shows that Oregon physicians are already cutting down on high-risk services. The very services that patients must have are often no longer available because of increased cost of professional liability insurance. For the same reasons, physicians are retiring earlier and leaving the state. Ultimately, the real issue here is not so much what physicians do, but what effect it has on Oregon citizens' ability to obtain convenient and prompt medical attention. The problem here is very basic. It's about access to medical care. Secondly, we unequivocally agree that patients should be fairly and promptly compensated for medical mistakes when those errors result in real injury, unlimited economic damages, and reasonable pain and suffering. We also believe that the profession is duty-bound to improve upon existing error reduction strategies and to develop new strategies in an environment free from blame, whose only goal should be making healthcare safer for our patients. Third, a healthy economy requires a healthy medical community. It's very important in Oregon right now. Good doctors and hospitals draw new employers and new jobs and their taxes. Doctors also attract and generate jobs in their own community. A recent study from the state of Oklahoma indicates that each doctor who is trained in a community and stays in that community generates 17 jobs for that community. A Washington study indicates that every time a physician leaves, 5 jobs go with him or her. The medical liability system is too expensive and it's inefficient. Studies of the distribution of premiums paid by physicians for medical liability insurance show that in Oregon, the numbers are worse than we heard before. Only 31 cents of each dollar goes to the injured patient. Plaintiff attorneys get about the same amount, and the rest goes to other legal, management, and administrative costs. Oregon's system is out of control. It just doesn't work. We're losing established doctors, and we are unable to recruit new physicians to replace them. Rural Oregonians are increasingly required to travel further and further for basic medical services, and our statewide trauma system is on the edge of collapse. Our major cities are feeling the pressure too. No one is immune in this environment. We all pay more for health care when professional liability insurance premiums go up. Think of the cost of your own health care and deductibles. Ordering diagnostic tests of marginal value, scheduling potentially unnecessary specialty referrals add to the cost as well. Our federal government estimates as much as $100 billion a year is spent on this type of defensive medicine, money that could go to caring for our uninsured in this state. Health care costs are surely going up and up and up. The cost of the medical liability system is one of those reasons. Let's get back on track. Let's assure fair compensation for real medical mistakes. Let's keep our doctors here in Oregon. Let's save our resources. Let's keep businesses here as well. Let's keep Oregon working. And most important, let's make sure that all Oregonians have access to medical care whenever and wherever they need it. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Doctor. Who is next up?
I am, Chairman.
Dr. Bernardo.
I can... We're kind of crap. We're okay. Peter Bernardo. I'm a general surgeon here in Salem for the last 11 years and am currently chairman of the OMA's Task Force on Liability Reform. I wish you all luck in studying this issue. I've spent the last 6 months trying to understand why we are where we are, and at least at this point, I think I have an idea. The fact is that the state of Oregon medical profession is in trouble for a lot of different reasons, and the liability crisis is the tip of the iceberg, but it may be that straw, as was mentioned earlier, that's going to break the camel's back. I practiced here in Salem for the last 11 years. Our population has gone up 25%. There are no more general surgeons here in town than there were when I came to town back in 1992. I spent the last 4 years looking for a new partner. I'm still looking. We have a tough environment to recruit to. We have a down economy. We have some of the lowest reimbursements in the nation. We have a liability crisis which is out of control. Oregon has always prided itself on providing excellent medical care. By most national markers, we provide cost-efficient, very good care, and we're losing that. It's being torn at the edges. The rural areas are suffering. Salem's not very rural, and we're suffering. In the next couple of days, you're going to hear a lot of testimony. It's been a long afternoon. You're going to hear a lot of things about why we have a crisis. Fact is, we have a crisis for one reason and one reason only. People are going to the courtroom. They're going to doctors when they've been injured, when they've suffered malpractice, and they're asking for a lot of money. They're asking for a lot more money than they used to ask. And, oh, by the way, in the last 4 years, they're getting more money because there are no limits. As a society, we seem to think that there's no end to where the money comes from, that it's an empty, bottomless pit, and there is no recourse and no responsibility. I'm afraid that there is. In Oregon, it's a very short loop, all right? Northwest Physicians is my insurance company. They insure a lot of us. The money that they pay out is coming out of my pocket. Dr. Webby was asked by Representative Crummell if she worries about suits on a daily basis, if she worries about it in the operating room. The answer is no. You don't worry about it when you're taking care of patients or when you're operating it. But you think about it at the end of the day. You think about it at night when you're sitting down and you're wondering, are you going to get sued? Where are your premiums going to be? Are you going to be able to get insurance? And none of us can get insurance to cover a multi-million dollar suit. So what happens when we lose a suit for $10 million? What happens to our children's future and our own futures, our retirement? Physicians are a valuable natural resource. Sometimes I think everyone assumes that they have the right to medical care and that there will always be trained physicians in a good system. And the fact is, that's not the case. That physicians are talented, they're motivated, they need to survive as well as provide care, and they'll leave or they won't come here. As physicians in the state of Oregon, we're not asking for the moon. We're not asking to be protected from suits. Dr. Cave has rightly stated that we all support fair and just compensation for injured patients. But as a society, somewhere, we're going to have to decide what the definition of fair and just is, because $10 million to one patient might mean that a community loses a physician and 1,000 or 2,000 patients don't get care next year. There's a balance in there someplace. The bills before you are a way to bring some fairness back to the system. They're not a total fix, but they're a solution, perhaps, a way to make sure, some of them, that money gets to the patients and not to other involved individuals, a way to ensure that a good physician who makes a mistake and has to pay out a malpractice claim doesn't pay for that mistake with his practice. Recognize that in any given year, 1 in 10 Oregon physicians is under a suit. And those are all good physicians for the most part. They are physicians who, after that suit, will be back in the office the next day seeing patients. So there's a lot of emotion on this issue, a lot of finger-pointing. The fact is that we're trying to get to a point where our system will provide compensation and not destroy the physician in the process.
Thank you, Dr. Bernardo. Who's up next?
I am. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the Judiciary Committee. My patients are used to waiting for me, and I have a lot more empathy for them today, but you're a lot better at catching up than I am. For the record, I'm Dr. Robbie Law, Dean's Family Health Care, Family Practice Clinic in Reedsport. I'm also a board member and secretary of the Oregon Academy of Family Practice. Two of my colleagues are in the audience today, Miles Redd, our president, and Elizabeth Steiner, the chair of our legislative committee. And we're working closely with the OMA, as are the other specialty groups, because this is an issue that cuts across all the specialty lines and affects everyone in our profession. But most importantly, it affects our patients. You might have seen 60 Minutes last night. I had a chance to, which I rarely do, but there was a story there on the effects of the malpractice, the liability crisis in New Jersey. And it was a very compelling story, except that the focus, I thought, was tended to be more on how the physicians were being affected and perhaps less so on how the patients and their communities were being affected. I have with me today one of my patients who traveled with their family to talk with you also. And I think in Reedsport, we've heard eloquently from the previous speakers and witnesses about the crisis in liability and what it means to us. But in Reedsport, we've gone beyond crisis. We've already suffered a severe loss. I'm a family doctor, as I said, and I've been practicing in Reedsport for 12 years. The three of my partners and I who do OB have provided all of the OB services for 10 years in that town. And over the last 5 years, we've delivered over 200 babies, and we've not had any malpractice claims. We're very proud of the services that we provide for health care for our patients, and we're deeply invested with the care of our patients and the health of our community. But 5 months ago, our local surgeon who did our C-section backup relocated. And as Peter stated, Dr. Bernardo points out that it's very difficult to find a general surgeon at all to come to your town, especially a small rural town. But a general surgeon who will do C-sections is going to be very, very difficult to find. When our surgeon left, he said, "You're going to have trouble finding someone who can cover." And he was right. The high liability premiums for being involved in OB cases, the fear of litigation, the risk of liability in OB have made it extremely impossible, extremely difficult, and we've not found one. And so with no emergency backup, we're forced to stop delivering babies in Reedsport as of October. But even before this change, our group was barely breaking even providing OB services. We don't do this because we make money at it. We do it because that's what we do to provide for our community. But our insurance premiums went up 50% in the last year and about 145% over the last 2 years. And in addition, our hospital liability, which you heard about from Samaritan Health Systems, our hospital's liability insurance carrier advised our hospital administrator that trying to provide OB services in a small hospital like ours is a very high risk, that even a single bad outcome, regardless of whether there's any malpractice involved, could result in litigation that would raise the legal and the liability insurance premiums and would make our hospital uninsurable, so we'd be out of the OB business anyway. So as a result of this current crisis in liability insurance, our community no longer has obstetrical care. Patients like Fawn could sometimes walk to their appointments with us. Now they have to drive 30 or 40 minutes to Coos Bay South through the weather and the traffic. And they're in labor. Sometimes they're very worried, and justifiably so, about getting there in time for their delivery. There's some that are putting off getting prenatal care, and we're afraid that some of them are not going to get prenatal care at all. The loss of timely care and the risk to our community's unborn babies and the pregnant mothers is something that worries us deeply, and it's frustrating, it's disheartening, and it's demoralizing. We want to continue doing OB as part of what we do for the community, but we're unable to. As alluded to earlier, there was a story in the Oregonian by Patrick O'Neill that really was dead on. It's important not only for our patients but also for our communities to have this sort of care. We try and attract new families, new businesses, and new industries to rebuild the economy in our community. We're not any different from any small community or large community in this whole state. And we can't provide that health care service that includes OB. We're afraid we're going to have a lot of trouble rebuilding. So we're not alone in this situation. And rural communities, though, are, as the metaphor goes, we're the canaries in the mine. And sometimes things go wrong, the canaries die. You've heard it several times now about the OHSU survey, which shows that we are in crisis. in throughout the whole state, that a third of the OB providers in this state are planning to get out of the business of delivering babies in the next 5 years. And that already almost a quarter, actually probably a quarter by now, because I just learned that Florence is pretty much out of the OB business within the next 3 months, they've already stopped delivering babies. There's maps in your packet that show where we are now in the current crisis and where we're going to be in the very near future if we're unable to obtain some sort of reform. So we believe that reform now to address this liability insurance crisis is needed so that women and children and our communities are going to get the quality health care that they need. Thank you very much for letting me testify. And I'm happy to answer questions, but I'd like to introduce Fawn, who with her family's been patiently waiting. They're used to it from being in my waiting room, but this one's bigger and it's got a lot more people in it.
Thank you very much, Dr. Law, and welcome, Ms. Brandon.
Hello, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, I am Fawn Brandon. I am from Reedsport, and I am one of Dr. Law's patients, which I was very deeply upset when I was told in my first trimester that I was going to have to be moved to Coos Bay. I am very scared of having to go to Coos Bay for reasons of something, emergencies, because I did have emergencies with my first that Reedsport was able to take care of. And I just wish that things would be able to change for people to be able to have their families in their own communities and not have to be moved, because there is things that need to be done for people in smaller communities so they can have their families and not worry about having to be moved and stuff like that. Thank you.
Thank you. Was the baby we heard yours? Was that
yes.
One of you? Yeah, okay. Just checking. I've got a few of my own, so I don't actually mind it in the committee room. So thanks very much, Ms. Brandon. We appreciate you coming forward. JL.
Thank you, Chair Williams and members. For the record, I'm JL Wilson, Director of NFIB, representing over 12,000 employers before you today. You will find that my small business owner constituency is very supportive of tort reform in general, particularly because litigation costs are very obvious to them. It's a transparent issue. They see them manifest in insurance, the prices of insurance products, which obviously they pay, thinking namely of liability, medical, some of which their ability to do business rides on their ability to obtain those types of insurance, which is a problem right now. I've heard it more than once that small business somehow is adversely impacted by tort reform because our recourse to the courts is hampered or things like that. I want to say unequivocally that I do not find that to be true. A comprehensive survey of our membership showed that 3% had been plaintiffs in a lawsuit, 3% over the last 5 years. Conversely, 11% had been defendants in a lawsuit over the last 5 years. So if you just extrapolate, you're four times more likely as a small business owner to be a defendant than actually initiate a lawsuit. So tort reform is something that generally we have a very favorable attitude toward. As it applies to health insurance in particular, because that's the focus of today's meeting, in 1998, our membership, 70% of our membership carried health insurance for their employees, 70%. That number today, done with our initial survey of business owners in 2003, is down to 61.6%. So it dropped from 70 down to 61.6 in the course of 5 years. And what happened? Quite simply, they're being priced out of the market. In the last 2 years alone, respectively, 80% and 79% saw the quote-unquote double-digit increases. In 2003, 35% got increases of 20% or more. And back last year in 2002, nearly 50% had an increase of 20% or more. You pile those year on top of year for the last 5 years, and you can see there's good reason for precipitous decline. With regard to liability rates, 54% got double-digit increases this year, which has also been problematic. with regard to the sentiment of our membership as it applies to the issues that are before you. We asked if you believe that caps on non-economic damages are a key component to limiting insurance costs. 88% said yes. Would you support caps on non-economic damages? 90% said yes. And I'll just wrap up with what we've been harping on with just about every committee meeting we've attended, and that is the health care policy notwithstanding, because you've heard hours of testimony how this impacts health care delivery and access in the state, and it's deeply troublesome. But in a broader economic sense, the diversion of productive resources in the business community that could be used to grow, stimulate the economy is being diverted for other purposes. And in some cases, people's ability to do business at all, if their livelihood depends on liability insurance, is completely shut down. And that's the state in which we find ourselves in right now. And one final comment. I could really think of no other way to suck the lifeblood out of rural Oregon, because believe it or not, only 30% of my members are in the Portland metro area, so that 70% roughly are in the outlying areas. I could really see no other way to suck the lifeblood out of rural Oregon than to let this problem fester. Because you hear about how schools are important to small business and other things. You could set up all the economic development zones or enterprise zones or anything across the state, and it wouldn't matter if there were no health care services in rural Oregon, because people simply don't want to do business in that kind of environment. And that concludes my remarks.
Thank you very much. Is there questions for any members of this panel? All right. We thank you very much for your testimony today. I appreciate the committee, those who were willing to stay beyond our regularly scheduled time, and all those who made presentations today. And we'll continue this discussion in the hearing tomorrow. So for the day, we are adjourned.
Yeah.